Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, doing great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Episode 101, let's keep it more than 100 today.
I'll allow it. All right. We also have royalty in the house, flying all across America. Yeah.
Royalty.
Yeah, you know, you do your thing. You're a little bit of everywhere. 12 different shows a week and whatnot. Monica McNutt.
Something like that. Hey, guys.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm not as good as Steve Jones Jr., who is cracking up laughing.
It is a joyous Thursday evening, I suppose. Before we dig into the actual pod, how did you spend the day without basketball?
Today was Cinco de Mayo. Had some friends that are in New York for the ESPNW Summit. Went to a great little Mexican spot in Harlem. Here's with the twist, though. And I'm not even really a drinker, y'all. But just thinking about having a margarita. Then our food took unusually long. And I'm a good tipper. But when you start messing with me, dare I say it, the inner Karen may come out.
Oh, no.
I know. But with a smile. Like, I'm very much get y'all together with a smile and a joke. So anyway, met the great manager at this establishment. He comes over and tells us, this was hilarious, y'all. We just had a big order for a middle school for the kids. They used up all the chicken. I looked at my guests. Did you order chicken? No. Did you order chicken? One of my three tacos is chicken. I said, my guy, I love that story, but we didn't order chicken. So what are we going to do about this? She's like, let me comp you drinks. I'm like, cool. Let's do some frozen margaritas. It's great. So then we get the bill and I'm like, just send me your manager, please, love. I was like, what's the kid's discount again? So he took care of me, tipped the waiter, whatever. It turned into a great day. The meal was good. But the margaritas left me unproductive until about 8 p.m. So there's that.
I see. Steve, how did you spend the day without basketball?
I'm rested. I'm ready to go. I had to take a timeout. I'm at that point in the playoffs where, you know, I just need a quick 20-second timeout for my eyes glaze over.
Oh, no.
But are you there? I'm here. I'm here. I'm ready to go. I'm excited.
Are you sure? We
Are we boring you? We don't want your eyes to glaze over. That would be bad.
This is the silliest that I've seen Steve in quite some time. So the day must have been good for no basketball tonight, and I still end up spending my day watching hoops. Wrote an article, caught up on rewatch Bucks Celtics, but watching that live was not fun. But
did you just throw a plug out there? Was this whole question for you to throw a plug out there?
And also shame us for not watching basketball on our
own. Yeah. That was a whole setup. You did a whole dribble handoff for that. Wait.
After this podcast, I will also watch Bucks and Celtics and pick some clips to talk about on TV tomorrow, but I didn't do it yet.
Oh, y'all didn't watch hoops? I did.
Oh, right. Basketball never stops, never sleeps. Okay.
I don't like where this is going. This was not a setup.
I mean, you started it. Like, we're just following along.
How you start the pod with a rise and grind, bro?
Who needs coffee when you have defense? Let's go.
You know what? Fair enough. I'll let y'all have it. Let's get into some basketball. on the Dylan Brooks front, hard foul against Gary Payton II. Gary Payton II is out 3 to 5 weeks with a fractured elbow. Dylan Brooks got a flagrant 2 for that play. He's also suspended for game. Monica, were you okay with the suspension?
Nope. Don't like it. I did not like the suspension. I'll be honest. Watching the play live, I was like, oh, this game's out of control. He's out of control. Watch the play again. Ooh, that's a flagrant 2, right? I think we are in very murky territory when punishment is dictated by injury. Like, I got a tape measure in my hand for some random reason. How many inches, centimeters was Brandon Clark away from a broken clavicle, shifted nose? But that was also a flagrant 2, and there was no suspension. And as we have these conversations, Draymond acknowledged reputation, rightly or wrongly so. If you go back to the Grayson Allen play, 1-game suspension. To me, the caliber of what Grayson did and Dylan did are not the same, nor does Dylan have the reputation. So I personally thought it was unwarranted. It was an unfortunate play. I do not think it was, there was malicious intent. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay, I got you. Steve, where'd you land on that?
I thought it was, the intent wasn't there, but it's one of those plays you can't do that. And for me, the tough part is I wonder how much of this ties into A, the injury, but also the Draymond flagrant foul. And are we comparing those two? Is it a buildup? Is it an addition? Why did one person get suspended? One person didn't. It just, it leaves it in a weird spot. Like if this had play had just happened on its own, I think maybe the discussion is a little bit different. The injury is unfortunate, obviously, but with so many events that have taken place, it kind of takes it to a weird place for me where it's like, that was a hard foul and an unfortunate result. Is it suspension worthy? Maybe, but I don't know. I don't know. It's one of those things where how consistent can you really be? And is every time someone gets hurt going to be it? Or are we going to do, that's just a hard playoff foul? Because if Gary Payton pops up, are we?
Agreed. And like we said, if Brandon Clark pulls up, would have broken something, would Draymond have been suspended? Like and we don't know. We don't have some of these answers. Dylan was out of control. And y'all remember at that point in the pace of the game, that game was like super frenetic going, you know, not a sustainable pace at all. But if we just go from what is more of a, I understand it through the lens of a basketball player, you could argue that he was going after the ball. It was weak. I don't know how many times somebody gets dragged down by their jersey. Not often. I know that. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you. It's murky territory. It is what it is. I don't. So then the question becomes, to your point, Steve, is how do you develop consistency when it comes to this policy? Is it going to be dictated by injury? I don't know that that's fair either. But if that's consistent across the board, then fine.
Okay, I got you. I would say, like, I was fine with the suspension. Like, I think the play from Dylan Brooks was reckless enough, especially once you get to, like, the head contact and stuff. I feel like that was reckless enough to where you can kind of justify the suspension for game three. I do get what you're saying, though. Like, yeah, I don't think it is kind of a slippery slope if you are adding punishment or adding games just because someone got hurt. And that is going to be kind of hard to legislate across the board. I just think with this specific play, it didn't feel like a play on the ball to me. Or if it was, like, there was, what, a 1% chance he could have got to it based on where he was and where GP2 was in there at that point?
Yeah. I took it as a very stupid play on the ball. Like, it's dumb.
Oh, 1,000%. I'm with you there. No. Yeah. Huh? Like, sometimes you got to let someone get a layup. Take the L.
Yeah. You're not going to catch up. Like, no. We agree. Bad decision, bad play. Here we are. And now, in a way, and I think both teams obviously have reasons to be galvanized moving forward. Like, the Warriors are now playing for their brother at home. Memphis, chip on their shoulder. Oh, y'all going to suspend our guy, but y'all guy got to stay, whatever. Obviously, Dylan is missed defensively. He hasn't been lights out offensively. And, you know, game two, he got ejected 3 minutes in and they managed to pull out a dub. So we'll see what happens. I've enjoyed the series. I hate that flagrant twos and suspensions and injuries become a headline, but I've really enjoyed the series otherwise.
That's been the most annoying part. Mm-hmm. But this has been a great series, and that was a great game. And I look up and it's ejection talk, and I'm like, I know, but also that there's way more you could talk about, but it's cool.
Agreed.
Talking about a little bit more than that. So I'm sorry to add to the fire here of talking about each game.
You're just on a roll with
a little bit of we're off great 10 minutes to start. We've reached yet another portion of the Ben Simmons. I don't even want to call it a saga because of the negative connotation, but the Ben Simmons situation. He is now going to be out multiple months following back surgery. Steve is checked out of Ben Simmons talk. He's made that pretty clear. I haven't gotten your thoughts on the Ben Simmons ordeal. But
I believe in endorphin dressing, guys. And I just think that Ben Simmons has caught a bad rap for some stupid stuff that has nothing to do with basketball. One, all jokes aside, I don't think the Nets should have ever put it out there that he was going to return. Now, various reports suggest that they actually believe that, and that's what he was saying. But I'm like, yo, protect this man from himself. Protect y'all's organization from looking more ridiculous. What did you actually think he was going to contribute? Clearly, he wasn't coming back at 100%. So now you're about to lob him out there versus a team that's kicking your backside? Like, great. A great addition. Woohoo! Way to save the series. Like, the whole thing was super unnecessary for me.
I never got that part. Ben Simmons was in a cool place. He was just smiling. There were vibes there. No one was talking about him, really. Why leak it? Let that be a 2 hours before the game tweet, Ben Simmons active in game 4. Oh, my goodness. Now you're going to throw the report out there. Now you ain't coming back. Now we recycle the same points. Man ain't played, man hurt. I don't know what you want me to say.
Man ain't played, man hurt. I love that. I do hope that he gets all the help he needs, whether it's his back, his mental, or the whole thing. But I also think, big picture, I am one who is, all right, you need a mental health day? Cool, period. Like, we just have to kind of accept that. But now we're bringing into question, which I know, if we're honest, probably was questioned from the jump, whether or not he was using that insincerity. And that's not for us to judge. But now, if he says there's a mental block, and then the report becomes, oh, no, he needs back surgery. Okay, now what are we doing? Now what are we doing? For real.
Oh, that was adorable. Okay.
Do you have an answer?
No. Like, I just didn't know. I didn't want to cut you off. That's all that was.
But, oh, no, I'm stuck.
I got you. I have just been very annoyed by the entire ordeal. I've talked to Steve about it. I've had my thoughts on the timeline about it. I do not like where most of the discourse has gone with him. And I think all of this kind of stems back to like a general disbelief in him. Back to the mental stuff that's kind of bled into the physical stuff, like questioning if he's actually hurt, if it's actually a mental thing because of how messy the ending in Philadelphia was. I guess is a cleaner way to phrase it. And so now I just didn't like where it went. There was just a lot of questioning from people that weren't in the know. And so now he's having the back surgery. Like, hopefully that quells some of the concerns about if he was actually hurt or not. We can get into the talk of should his availability for game 3 or 4 or lack thereof, should that have been leaked? Like, probably not. Like, there have been missteps from his camp, from the Nets, from him in particular. But I just don't like when that bleeds into, is he actually dealing with mental health issues, or is he just trying to get his money, or is he just trying to game the system, or is he just soft or whatever? Like, yeah, all of that has felt very messy for me, and I just don't like that at all.
I get that. I do think some of it is the nature of the beast, though. And it is, we want to do this. We toss around that phrase, sports is a microcosm of society. I don't know that the average person in a 9-to-5 could go and say, I need a mental health day without getting side-eyed by their employer. And so to your point, are we making progress in this conversation? Sure. But are we moving probably a lot slower than people would like to admit? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think that's true that you would get the side-eyed. And I also feel like that's the larger issue.
And that's what I'm saying. So yeah. It's now been magnified through the lens of sports and a high profile, well-paid athlete. But like, as a country, we still got a lot of work to do around that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely right. All right, Steve, do you have any lasting thoughts? I think you're good.
No, I'm swinging the ball. I'm cutting. All right.
All right. Well, then let's move on to some playoff talk. The Phoenix Suns are up 2-0 on the Dallas Mavericks. We just saw the evisceration of their defense in the fourth quarter in that game, too. Poor Luka Doncic, who was targeted quite a bit late in that game. Monica, I'll start with you. One, what were your expectations heading into this series? And what has kind of stood out to you so far through 2 games?
Listen, I was feeling Dallas. Like, I was in Dallas for game 1 versus Utah. And there was something different, right? Like, you could just kind of see it in them and in Jason Kidd. And even though they came up short, obviously they ultimately go on to win the series. I actually thought that this series would be a lot more competitive than it's been thus far. And I guess that is a tip of the cap to the Phoenix. Wow, I was about to call them Mercury. WNBA season starts this weekend, y'all. Whoop, whoop. The Phoenix Suns. it's a tip of the cap to them, the way that Chris Paul has been operating with precision down the stretch, the return of Devin Booker. I mean, all of those role pieces stepping up. To me, the Suns have gotten better each series. Some of that forced, you know, the absence of Book forces some of those other guys to step up. But they are, I had them going to the finals from the jump all season long. I do hope that we get a few closer games in the series, though. But Luka, in the playoffs, you got to play some kind of defense. Like, you got to be formidable. Like, you got to keep a team honest. And he's just not done that down the stretch. And so they're kind of like, all right, bet. Cool, have 50. You're not going to stop us.
Mm-hmm. That's up. Steve, what have been your initial takeaways through two?
Well, I mean, first off, what they did to Luka just wasn't necessarily cool or right. Like, the way they made him work, like, it really wasn't. Like, we talk about matchup hunting all the time in the playoffs, and they decided, hey, you know what, Luka, we're going to make you try and do all the things defensively. Hey, guard these pick and rolls, and we're going to make you help off the ball, and then we're going to make you close out, and now Jay Crowder's driving by you, and now everybody's trying to help you. It's a little, like, oh yeah, now we're sending pin downs for Devin Booker. It's a little different than just, hey, Chris Paul's trying to ISO you one-on-one, which they also did, and he made shots. Like, that, if I'm Dallas, I'm sick. Like, y'all have done all these things, and now we get the switch. We feel good. Hey, I got Chris Paul in front. I'm going to contain it. We're good. Step back. Sweet. So for me, it's just Dallas has to find a way to figure out the blend. And I've had fun watching this series just because of the chess match of Phoenix saying, hey, Luka, go ahead and score. We're going to take away your options, take away your space. Mikal Bridges is going to navigate these screens. Our big is going to stay back. If you get a switch you like, we're showing help no matter what. And now what are you going to do? Because if Luka is just scoring, that's one thing. But if he's scoring, creating, you get the lobs, you get the kicks, now you get Jalen Brunson going, that's a whole different kind of ordeal. And Dallas hasn't been able to get that piece of it going. First half of game two, you kind of saw it a little bit, but then they were only up by two. So,
It's so crazy because, like, the brilliance of Luka is undeniable, but the way they play with versus without Luka is dramatically different, which a guy of that caliber does demand. But to your point, like, cool, Luka, you're gonna average whatever 40, whatever, cool. But Jalen Brunson is gonna be held under 10. Like, what? Huh?
They have not been able to find a way to unlock him. Oh, you go ahead, Steve.
Oh, no, I was going to say, like, find a matchup for Jalen Brunson. Find something for him. Like, if you're going to do the first 6 minutes of just straight Luka, that's fine. But stop trying to put Jalen Brunson in the switch against Jay Crowder. Like, find the matchups for him. I'm just saying, that's not the one. I don't think Bossman 99 agrees.
I feel like it's weird. Like, the size has bothered Jalen Brunson a bit.
Absolutely.
But I'm also like, he's not as good as Luka. You can do some of the things that you did for Luka, like particularly in game one, like Luka would call for a screen, get Chris Paul into the action, and then go with the pick and roll with Dwight Powell to get Ayton in it because Phoenix doesn't want to switch Chris Paul on your big typically. Like, you can do that for Jalen Brunson. Devin Booker's got net matchup in the first two games. Like, screen off to get Chris Paul in the action, then go with your big. Like, that should give Jalen Brunson something to attack. Versus, all right, let's go 1-4 pick and roll. You get the switch with Jay Crowder. Now, what are you doing? It's just more.
I think that sounds great, but I think Jalen is such a sort of a feel guy, right? Like, either he's wingman to Luka and like operating in that space, or he's like, Luka is out. Just in terms of watching him over the course of the season and even the last series, right? Like, Phoenix has the tools to, one, make him struggle. And for Jalen, I don't think it's just about scoring. I think it's about getting in rhythm and being able to set up other guys that unlocks his scoring. Like, when you think about when he dropped 40, he might only have 5 or 6 assists that day, but just the way that he's able to hunt the paint and move the ball around. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you could call for some ISO action for him, but, like, also, cool. Really, maybe not where he finds his rhythm in the way that we saw him be a real threat in the previous series.
And speaking of the previous series, and to your point, Nikias, this is a different defensive team.
100%.
Like, Phoenix's defense this series has been very impressive as far as flying around, showing doubles, helping, rotating. Like, they're not giving the same gaps. And Dallas has to work
like transition.
It's not there. And remembering it's Utah, they were pretty much just like, hey, we're going to bring the ball at the court and just drive by someone and see what happens.
And kick it to Maxi Kleber to hit a three in the corner.
Hit all Kleber
for three.
If I'm a Utah fan, I'm sick. I'm looking at this man in this series like, hey man, nah. But it's not the same. And so I want to give Phoenix's defense a salute because not only do they have 100%. Those wings, but they have that team mindset where, hey, we're switching, we're flying around, we're doubling. You don't have those same gaps. And it's tough for Dallas to grind that way.
Mm-hmm. That's the going into... I haven't checked since going into the Utah series, but like statistically, they average more assists without Luka. And so for a team that's flying around and has length, oh, you're not going to pass the ball? Perfect. Bet. We're just going to literally stand here with our hands extended and close these gaps. Oh, and we can move our feet. Good luck.
It's been kind of tough. I guess if you're going to go with, obviously you go with a Luka-centric offense because Luka's very good. With the way that Phoenix has been showing help, if you do get the late switch, what that's kind of opened up is some of the situations in the corner and stuff like that. Is there a way to move Jalen Brunson around the chessboard a little bit so he can get some of those catch and shoot opportunities or some of those catch and drive opportunities that you're getting? That's kind of been the one way Dallas has been able to get Phoenix in rotation even a little bit because they're showing that extra help to Luka.
In theory, yes, but the problem is they're so good at helping that even when he beats that first closeout, someone else is there. And their lineup balance is kind of off where their best spacing lineup features both Maxi Kleber and Davis Burton, a.k.a.
Bertans.
Dave Bertans. Man, Dave Burt, all right?
Just call him DB. Did you call this man Dave Burt? Wow, that's something.
This is going to spread. I can't believe it. Shout out to the Dunker Spot community. This is so good. So this is a deep cut from my Dunkers.
Oh, man. Wow. I do love Jason Kidd as coach. He's impressive. And so, yes, to your point, I agree with Steve. In theory, all of that. But I think also you can't necessarily game for it to be Jalen. It's got to be whoever finds, you know what I'm saying? Like, Dorian Finney-Smith has to knock out threes. If Cleveland's on the floor, he's got knocked out threes. I think it's really hard to game plan for Jalen to be the guy on the swing. Again, and part of that goes back to his size.
That's fair. I guess with that, so is there an answer for Dallas? Is it just going to boil down to we just have to have good shooting nights? Or is there kind of, is there something they can scheme up to generate more paint touches aside from Luka?
I mean, they showed the template. It works if they can make it close in the fourth, but they have to hit so many threes. Their defense has to show up. They just don't have a lot of margin for error. So if you have Luka going and you have that pressure point with Luka having maybe the space to operate and score and drop, in a tight game, that probably changes the math a little bit. Those rotations maybe seem a little bit different. Problem is Dallas can't get it to be tight. Either one of the things fall apart. They stop making threes or their defense goes away. And they need all three things going. And that's just a very slim margin against a very good team in the playoffs. So they know what they got to do. They just got to do it, to me, at this point in the series.
All right, I'm with you. Oh, Monica, you're about to say something?
Yeah, I mean, here's great analysis. They just have to play better. Excellent basketball analysis. They have to play better. I'm like really thinking schematically. In the playoffs, teams don't become something that they're not, right? And we talked about the previous series matchups. Like the reality of, sorry, Jazz fans, like is they probably rely entirely too much on Rudy Gobert, who doesn't come outside the paint. Dallas exploited them. Boom. Like formula we've seen before. In this case, Dallas relies so much on Luka and Phoenix's continuity and length on the defensive end. Like, oh, you want to be a primarily ISO team? Like I should look this up. I'm curious to see if where they rank in terms of the ISO conversation, in terms of teams that run ISO the most over the course of the season. Like that's what y'all do. Perfect. That's what we want to defend. Like, I just think it's a bad matchup. And there's schematically, they're not going to, like, Luka all of a sudden is not about to be running off a gazillion screens. Like, that's just not, you maybe four times out of a seat, like one time a quarter. But, like, the fix to beat a team like Phoenix is a lot more movement. And that's just not who they are.
Well, I think we're all in agreement then. I think coming in, at least when Steve and I talked about this in the series preview, like this didn't seem like a great matchup for Dallas. Like as switchy as Phoenix is, as well as they rotate. I mean, they're just freaking good. Only team in the NBA to
they're really good
in the top five in offensive and defensive rating. Like they just do this, and it would have taken Herculean Luka and also the other stepping up. And if you're not getting much from Jalen Brunson because of the length, if you're not getting anything from Spencer Dinwiddie, then it's like, where's the creation coming? And you're basically asking your guys to bomb away from three, and they've tried, and they've gotten that in spurts. Like, even Maxi Kleber is shooting well from three in this series, but it just isn't enough. Because even with Kleber knocking down threes, Phoenix is pretty comfortable rotating off. Like, he's not a feared guy. He's very much a tip your cap if you can beat this guy. And if that's not enough for you, Phoenix just has too many answers on the other end as well. Like, Dallas, I don't even feel like Dallas has been an awful defensive team. Like, Phoenix has been able to find a weak link. They've been able to stress Luka out, to Steve's point. Like, they've put him in a bunch of actions and then also hunted him.
Yeah. And Phoenix has been really good. And I mean, I actually thought, and I'm not going to say this series, I don't think it's going to be a sweep. I thought the way that Dallas was playing coming in, I did think that these games would be tighter earlier. Right? I still expect Phoenix to get out, but I thought they were playing with a lot of confidence and a lot of mojo, but we saw two different Dallas teams versus the Jazz. And again, not taking anything away from Luka, but like the team that moves the ball, to me, that if you got a strong defensive unit, your best bet is to get them on skates and find the hole that way. And so that is the team that's the version of Dallas minus Luka, candidly.
We're seeing a carryover. Sorry. We're seeing a carryover from the end of that Utah series where they're trying to figure out how to get everyone going. And also, Phoenix just really good offensively.
Phoenix is excellent.
They ain't been able to find really a way to lock in there. I wonder if they just go zone in game three.
I mean, that's kind of where it went to end the game two. It's like, all right, well, you can't hunt Luka if he's just at the bottom of the zone. Do something now, which I'm not sure if you want to give.
Man, you could screen him, though. You still could screen him. No, don't worry about it. Backline screens on the zone. We can get you now.
If there's a team that'll be able to figure it out, that would be Phoenix.
Man, what? I ain't never seen no pin down on the back line of the screen and Devin Booker came off in cash. Like, whoops. You're going to see it today.
Oh, Phoenix is a freaking buzzsaw, man. All right, let's move to Grizzlies Warriors.
What kind of audience do we have here, Nikias? Because parts of, maybe it's just Warriors Twitter that has deemed me a Warriors hater. That's not where I'm at.
Oh, but you got packed up by San Fran? What happened?
Apparently. To be honest, one time on First Take, I said their championship window was closed. Immediately after that show, I was like, that probably wasn't my best take.
One of those they're not going to let you live down, huh?
But I did not pick them to win a championship this year. I'm still taking Phoenix. They're a great team. I respect what they do. Jordan Poole has been excellent. And I also maintain that Memphis can make it interesting, as they have, and I think they will continue to. So,
all right. What makes this interesting for Memphis in this series?
Same kind of thing. Let me slow down because I'm excited. The same type of thing we're talking about in the Dallas Phoenix series. I think when you have a team that takes so much pride on the defensive end of the ball, and I do believe that this is a budding rivalry in the league, right? All I want is a chance to guard the best, right? And to me, obviously, Jaren Jackson game one was out of his mind. But I was having this conversation with a friend the other day. If Draymond Green was Jaren Jackson's height, like size, there would be no debate ever about him potentially being a Hall of Famer. And I think people sleep on the versatility of Jaren on that back line. Now, very much prone to foul trouble. He's still working through that part. But between his size, obviously Dylan Brooks is now suspended, but his defensive constitution, Brandon Clark has been fantastic. Like, they have both the size and the speed, to me, to hang with the Warriors. Now, it requires an all-time level of mental stamina on the defensive end, because as soon as you sleep or turn your head, like, backdoor cut, you're out of luck. But in terms of the attitude to do it, the skills to do it, and the actual physical, like, makeup of their team, I just thought it's a good matchup. It's a fun matchup.
It's a very fun matchup. You're two games in, two really good games. I'm sure both teams feel like they could have won both of them, and they both feel like they could play a lot better. I can't wait to see what happens next. Now, my only issue with Golden State is, can this defense hold up with this small lineup? And can they figure out a way to show Ja Morant some sort of bodies? If you're watching this series out there, folks, when Ja Morant has it at the top of the key, look at the space he sees. That man sees an ocean. It don't matter who you switch on him, and they attack in Jordan Poole, which, by the way, we talk about that if you want to.
Yeah, it might be about that time.
Uh-oh.
You can't have... Oh, I know Nikias is ready. He's on the list of guys. He's on the list of guys. I know. It's been in the talk. Don't worry about it. Hey, we're 101 episodes in. I know you. We got chemistry. They have got to handle dribble penetration much better. They got to have a team mindset. Make them kick. Minnesota gave you a template. That may not be your base, but you can't let this man dictate terms and feel like he can get in the paint whenever he wants. That helps Memphis out so much in the half court, which is kind of their issue.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can bail out with job dribble penetration, now that turns into kicks. Now they're getting stops, easy transition buckets. They always have something to go to. The flip side is, they needed every single one of those points he gave them last game.
100%.
And that's the fun of the series, because you can point to that, and Ja's playing crazy. He needs to take it threes now because he knows he can get the paint whenever he wants.
Let's go.
But no one else has it going outside of him and Jaren Jackson Jr. My guy Desmond Main, I don't know where he's at.
I hope he's okay.
Yeah, he's dealing with the back injury.
Someone's back, yeah.
Soreness, yeah. Tightness, yeah. It's not great. But, like, it's him being hurt and also, and Steve, you pointed this out during one of our watch parties, Golden State is keyed into basically every off-ball action Memphis wants to run. Those staggers, they're switching, they're staying attached. Like, Steph's done a good job of staying attached. Like, they can't surprise them with it. And that's actually my question for really the both of you, because Golden State is not a team that wants to send two to the ball very often, and that was Minnesota's template. And that was the way they were able to get Ja Morant a little bit out of his rhythm offensively. And I wonder for Golden State, one, do you want to go that route? Because you do have the athletes, especially if you're putting like Andrew Wiggins on Ja Morant as the primary. Like, you have enough length on the wings to be able to bother Ja a little bit in that way. But the counter to that would be, if you're sending two to the ball, is that a way for Memphis to run some of their actions to where you're just kind of baiting two to the ball, and then you're having Desmond Bane run off of the screen, and that's a way for him to finally get free? Do you want him to get going?
The question is if the Warriors should run two to the ball, or if the Memphis wants the Warriors to run two to the ball.
No, if Golden State should send two to the ball.
My personal philosophy is you should do whatever you got to do, right? So maybe not the entire game, but do I think they're throwing Ja some different looks could benefit them? Yeah, sure. Like, what you did so far hasn't worked. So, like, give it a whirl. Like, just let's just see what happens. Now, I don't... That's a good question. I do think showing him some different looks would help. I think it depends on, obviously, who's on the floor and personnel. Because I do think Memphis's size is a smart way to counter potentially two to the ball. Because they are so... The chemistry as a squad, like, that's when Ja throws something ridiculous behind his back to get out of the trap, but Bane's on a catch and then Jaren Jackson's on a cut. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's a little bit risky, but what you've done so far has not necessarily been successful either. So why not?
Yeah, like I'm genuinely asking, because I'm just like, okay, they are pretty much playing straight up. They're giving Ja switches, especially when they're with their small lineup, and Ja's able to get into the paint. And you don't want Ja to live in the paint and also have the jumper going. And that's where you get the 47 a game.
To me, the part, and this is where the Warriors deserve credit. The points in the paint battle, they've actually, I know they edged them out in game two. I'm pretty sure they did in game one as well. The transition that's missing in terms of the identity of Memphis, like, yeah, Ja is taking those threes. He's not shooting the most compelling percentage, but he's shooting the ball with confidence. That long rebounds, those are assists for the Warriors to get back out and get out of transition on their end. And so I will credit them for protecting the paint enough, because that is, you literally see the complexion of a ball game change when Memphis is getting to the paint recklessly with a bunch of energy and hash line.
The funny part is I feel like it may just be an easy fix for Golden State as far as, hey, we just need to do this a little bit better. because if they're hitting shots, or they didn't shoot well in game two, puts a little bit more pressure on those Memphis half-court possessions. Those drives don't hit the same. But for me, I don't know that Golden State should put two on the ball because now you're opening too much up. So now say you do that, you're opening up the roll, you got kicks for shooters, and now you try and go back to your base, Ja's still driving. Now you have two things you got to worry about. So I just think showing a little bit more early help would be better. I have a sneaky suspicion, just gut feeling, at some point we see Draymond Green starting on Ja Morant.
For wolf tickets, as they say, that ain't gonna last. They can't afford to have him on Ja.
No. Not just for the look.
Yeah, okay.
Just for the
I
look.
Got you.
Just for the look. Not for the one-on-one matchup, but just for the look. You screen, I switch. I'm back in the position I was before I had the matchup. Now I can help. But I think we see.
We did that one time in college. I did the jump ball just so I could get into the press. I wasn't gonna win the jump ball. anyway, I get that. I get that, Steve Jobs Jr. That's a good one.
Hey, I'm just here.
I just think this series is great. I just think this series is so good. You teased the Jordan Poole conversation. Nikias, please. I need to hear this.
It's not even, well, there was plenty of that in game two. I guess we could start with that. This is where Golden State has some lineup decisions to make. Because if he can't hold up defensively, and we're dealing with a small sample size right now, what are they, like a minus 11 in the series when they go to this lineup right now? So, like, it can turn very quickly, and they didn't shoot well in game two. But, like, defensively, Ja hunted out that matchup. Hunted out Jordan Poole, also hunted out Klay Thompson, but Steve's going to yell at me about that one. That's fine. But with Jordan Poole, they need him to kind of make them unstoppable offensively, because you know what kind of attention Steph garners on and off the ball. Klay's had shot well, but he's always an active threat off the ball. Jordan Poole is the one that he's the second creator for them on the ball. And so you need him going. But if he's not going and he's also getting targeted defensively, that's where I'm just like, okay, at what point does Golden State prioritize a little bit more size or prioritize a little bit more athleticism? Like, when do we see more Kuminga? Do we see more Otto Porter? Which I've had some questions about him offensively as well. But, like, when does Steve Kerr look at trying to shore up some of the other things that are plaguing the small ball lineup right now? If Jordan Poole can't hang up, if he can't hold up defensively.
That's interesting. I hadn't really keyed in on that, but now that I'm thinking about it, you're right. I think that that's a trade-off you got to live with in this series. I don't know that you trust Kuminga and Porter on the floor on the offensive side of the ball. Like, is Poole that bad defensively in your mind that you're going? Now, Otto, shout out to my Hoyer brother. I think he might be able to give you something, but Kuminga's a rookie. That's going to show up.
Okay, like, I'm not super worried offensively. Like, I think he does enough as a guy that can lurk around the dunker spot or just fly in for cuts. Like, they can get enough out of him with the other shooters on the floor. I think defensively be more of the question, but again, like, you might need that size, the added size, the added athleticism, especially if they are going to start mixing in more aggressive coverage against Ja. Like, you're going to want that ground coverage from Kuminga. I think he can help you a little bit more than Jordan Poole could if you're shifting schemes at all.
I'm going to go devil's advocate and try and live with whatever you can get defensively, because that offensive lineup is too tough to deal with. If you put a Kuminga out there, good burst of energy, he can give you good flashes, but that's also going to be an outlet for Memphis. Mm-hmm. That's the last thing you need, especially with how they're already playing off Draymond. So yeah, you can get some high lows, but that's two people they can play off of, as opposed to running around having to play four guys. So I don't know. I thought you were going to go with Kevon Looney minutes.
That's the I mean, that would be the other one if they want to size that up.
Yeah, that's, you're about to slow down everything, though. So,
you might want to slow things down against Memphis, though.
I hear not on their offensive side, though.
For Golden State?
For the Warriors, yeah. I don't think Kevon Looney is the fix.
What's funny is, though, I think the Warriors did kind of slow things down. They went pick and roll heavy in game two.
super. And it's go ahead, Steve.
No, go ahead.
No, but you were pointing out Jaws looking at an ocean. They definitely went pick and roll heavy. They do they're doing a really good job of getting back in transition and setting up their defense, right? Like, it's literally like defensive drills. Oh, cool. What, everybody has one foot in the paint. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I thought, I'm with you. In the second half of game two, I thought the Warriors notably slowed things down. But I thought Memphis did a decent job of responding. Now, granted, most of that was Josh 47. So we got to see what that looks like moving forward. Memphis has been really rushed on second chance opportunities, which I don't understand. Pump fake, like get to the free throw line, like stop, bring it back out if you need to. That frenetic, like middle school basketball, like what are y'all doing? Stop. It's not that serious. You got options.
Yeah, you don't want to feed Golden State transition opportunities, especially after like second chance opportunities, because now you're looking at like 5-on-3 and you just don't want to. That's not a mix you want to get into.
No, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by the Warriors doing matchup hunting stuff with Steph Curry and what they can do pick and roll wise with Draymond Green in that lineup with him rolling. And if that is going, plus they're actually making shots because, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to help off Draymond. And that's going to be an automatic swing and someone's flying off for a three. And if those are falling, we're having a little bit of a different conversation.
And they're going home. They're going to the crib.
This is who's
Melton, no, Anderson or Melton will start for Brooks, probably.
Who would you start with Dylan Brooks out for game three?
Dude, sometimes Kyle Anderson really be moving in slow-mo, and I'd be like, dog, come on. Come on. I've been impressed with D'Anthony Melton. And although Zaire Williams had some moments where I could have pulled all my little hair out, he also had some, okay, I see you, young fella. Like, you know what I'm saying? It was, he probably came out about even at the end of the game because there's, what are you doing? I like the upside of Williams. It's a really big spot. You definitely don't start him. I think you go Anderson to start. And we talk about slowing the game down. Like, Melton is a little bit more inclined to pick up the pace. I think on the offensive side of the ball, he could be probably a little bit more of a dog one-on-one defending. But if Anderson is in the right place, like, he gives, you know, the length that you would need to contend with the Warriors.
Steve, where would you go?
I think I go Zaire.
Really?
I think I go Zaire and give Melton, keep him off the bench, give you some sort of flow because you might want him with that lineup. I think he goes Zaire. What's going to be interesting is with Steven Adams coming back, what does that do to the, does Tillman just not play anymore?
I love Tillman though.
Go ahead and say it, Nikias.
Hashtag draft good basketball players. He shouldn't have slid.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
One would think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, Tillman will be fine. Tillman will still play. Steven Adams becomes a thing when Kevon Looney's on the floor. It'll be great. Big man basketball.
There we go. I would probably go. I think I'd also go Zaire. Like, they've started him before. It's not like he hasn't got the Warriors matchup before as a starter. Like, they've thrown him on Steph during the regular, it's playoff time, so it's different. But, like, he's gotten the reps against them already. And to Steve's point, it's a way to kind of normalize rotation still if you just put him into that spot.
I hear y'all.
So maybe we shall see. Let's dig into Bucks-Celtics. Another series that is tied right now. We'll just roll through the East real quick. How do you unlock Giannis if you're Milwaukee?
I don't think you do nothing different. And I've been saying this all day as we're prepping for shows tomorrow. I think the difference in Giannis this year versus last year is that I trust him to make the adjustments. Right? Like, Grant Williams played, it doesn't get better than that in terms of his defensive performance, needling, bothering, pestering, picking up charges versus Giannis. But what we've seen over the course of this season is Giannis take the next step as a decision maker, as someone who's not just going to overwhelm you with his sheer power. Mm. And so to me, I trust him to make smarter reads, to keep his elbows out the way, pass the balls to his teammates. Like, game two to me was about the Celtics just punching first and the Bucks just didn't get up in time. Like, there's nothing you could do with crazy first quarter from Jaylen Brown. Like, first half, rather. And so I'm not worried about Giannis. We saw about it, especially about the fourth quarter, but in the second half of that ball game, he was getting to his spots again. Mm-hmm. It was just a little too late. So I'm not particularly worried about Giannis. Do I think Grant Williams continues to bring that level of intensity? Yeah, but you're not going to stop Giannis. You can only hope to contain.
I got you. Steve, what about you?
I don't see that happening again, especially because even in game one, he had a level of passing and playmaking that was tough. And they can still find him and switch him on matchups that Boston doesn't necessarily like. I would just like to see Milwaukee open some things up for him a little bit. Then they tried a couple things. You know, empty the side, have Giannis scream for Drew. Now, hey, y'all don't want to switch that. Now Giannis might be able to roll. Or, hey, let me attack Robert Williams a few times. Let's space the floor. Let's do a couple things because, you know, Al Horford's held up in the matchup, at least in game two. But that's my thing with Milwaukee. It was a great night from Boston, but it kind of felt like Milwaukee's going to go, hey, you guys have to do that three more times.
Right.
Like that. Like, you got to do that with Giannis. You got to make those shots, make those plays consistently. They never felt like they reacted in that game. And that was big to me. We talk about adjustments. I always like to see how a team reacts. And we've seen in the playoffs where teams see that something isn't working, try something else, and now you're really in trouble. So I think Milwaukee's going to stick with their guns.
All right, I got you. Like, you touched on it, the one thing that stood out to me in the second half, like, they did go with more empty corner stuff. They let Grayson Allen run some stuff. Or pick with Drew. I think rolling him with an empty corner, if you don't get that switch, that's a way to unlock him. Beyond that, Giannis just kind of has to play better. Like, we talked about it after the game one. Went 9 of 25 on the field, and Boston defended him pretty well. But also, Giannis just missed some layups that he normally doesn't. And so I went into that like, okay, I'm pretty encouraged from Milwaukee side. They defended well. They threw Boston out of rhythm. They got a bad scoring game from Giannis with some makeable shots. And then he followed that up with an even worse game too, offensively, at least as a scorer. So there's still low-hanging fruit to grab in that regard with some of the misses. But oh, go ahead.
I do think we got to be careful because, and I'm guilty of this, same conversation around KD. He'll figure it out. Like, he's KD. And overlooking the commitment of Boston on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. Now, Giannis is uniquely equipped to handle any type of little bumps, bruises, switches, like, and he still put up numbers that, you know, KD obviously struggled to get. But there is something to be said for him having to think a little harder in the course of what comes so naturally to him. Do I think that he can do it? Yeah, but might we see, over the course of a series, a far less efficient version of Giannis that still puts up numbers? That would not surprise me at all.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's a good point. I got to take my L too. I was the leader of KD's going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll hold that L. I would also just like to see Milwaukee get a little bit of seasoning offensively to help him out.
Because what do you mean?
I mean, just don't do stuff like, hey, Drew Holiday, go stand at the dunker spot. Grant Williams is guarding you. Oh, Giannis is trying to attack. Oh, the help is right there. But just don't do that. Don't do stuff like that. Just little things like that. Like, if you're going to do that, then yeah, we have a whole different conversation. Because Giannis's paint pressure can change the game, but ..
So here's the next part of this, though. And y'all remember the finals last year, right? Like, Bud doesn't make adjustments. Woo, 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 right? Like, ultimately, they reign supreme. But if I had a vote, Ime Udoka was on my ballot as coach of the year. And so, if you talk about seasoning, right? I don't know if it's, you know, Ime's fresher out of the league. He's had a little bit of a different coaching tree than Bud. You know, those pop guys tend to like stick to their thing. But if we get into a place where this now comes down to X's and O's, I'm a big Ime fan. Like, I'm a big Ime fan.
Intrigued. I'm intrigued. Like, I'm with you as someone that was yelling at Bud every other episode during the postseason, where it's just like, why are you doing this thing or why are you not doing this thing? And then we get like game three or four, and it's like, ah, wow, if you would have did this in game one, you might be in a better spot. And even in the finals, there's a little bit of that. And then they won the whole thing. So, like, there's only so much I could say, but it's still kind of there. So
I said it for you, don't worry.
Yeah, yes, you did. So I'm with you. Like, there are some schematic tweaks Milwaukee have. On the defensive end, how do we feel about Milwaukee kind of shifting the matchup a little bit in the second half? Because Giannis got the Jaylen Brown matchup in game one, got it in game two. And then the second half comes and he is not on Jaylen Brown anymore.
That's not new though, right? In terms of like, Giannis doesn't necessarily end up on the best player, right? That's not new. Is that new?
No, not new. But like, I, at least heading into series, like I was surprised. I was expecting him to get like the Horford matchups he can roll. Or getting the Robert Williams matchup he can roll. And so they start with Jaylen Brown. It's like, okay, that's interesting. I wonder if Boston's going to pick at the screen navigation for Giannis. Like, I wonder if that's going to be a thing. And so it was interesting to me to see Milwaukee kind of blink in that way. It's like, all right, no, we are just going to put Giannis on Derrick White now. We're going to put Drew on Jaylen Brown now. We're going to keep Wes on Jayson Tatum. We're going to mix this up so we can switch a little cleaner. Let's get Giannis in a more natural matchup.
I thought they were trying to get Giannis back in his help position. And Boston saw that and said, nope, you're not doing that. Giannis, Derrick White, you go stand on that strong side corner. And Giannis, you can't help the same way. Sorry, buddy. All that stuff you did in game one protecting the paint, you're just going to stand and watch over there.
I actually thought that some of that, too, was about Giannis was kind of in foul trouble a little bit, game two. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you got to preserve him a little bit. So, I mean, now that y'all are talking it through in terms of the matchups and the help, that makes total sense. But I just thought it was more about, all right, dude, like, we need you on the floor, preservation of energy, and we don't want you to pick up fouls trying to keep up with, you know, because Jaylen was insane. Like, what?
Yeah. No, that's a good call. I was just intrigued by that one. I guess on that front, do you anticipate seeing the same matchup then heading into game three? Do you think they keep him on Jaylen to start? Or do you think that's going to be more of a learning curve? Because I think Marcus Smart's going to be back for game three. And we've seen him.
Yeah. I don't know. This is where, and it's, so 15 minutes before game one started, we were doing hoop streams and I was like, ooh, do I believe that the Celtics are about to pull this off? You got to roll with the champs all year long. I do think something unique is happening with the Celtics, but this is where I feel like people were sleeping on Chris Middleton's absence. Like, not even the offensive side, but the defensive side of the ball, right? Because if Chris is on the floor, then Giannis can go guard the natural, like what he can go for, and you got, if it depends on if you got Brooke or Bobby back there, like, it's just a little bit easier because of Chris's length. Now, to be fair, in game one, I was like, ooh, Wesley Matthews, wait, he's actually still a dog on D2. Maybe it's not as much of a big deal, but I think over the duration of a series, you're reminded where you miss Middleton.
That's fair. And to that point, Boston went after Bobby Portis a little bit more. Also, Milwaukee got a little bit more aggressive in pick and rolls against Jayson Tatum. Like, we saw that a little bit after the first quarter, at least in game one. But in game two, like, they were blitzing a lot of those.
They did it all the time, Nekias. That's why I was high on Boston's process. They didn't make any shots. They didn't make any plays. They didn't make them pay. But two on the ball is a good thing. I keep saying it. Like, that's what Boston's been waiting for. Tatum's offense to create opportunities for everyone else. Now they got to make.
Oh, God, that is what they've been waiting so long for. You're right. Ooh.
They've been trying. And now
he's making his teammates better now.
Now, the thing for Boston, everyone's going to point to the three-point shooting, and that's fantastic. And you got to make shots. They have to continue to drive. They need to blend. They got to get paint touches. They got to get drive and kick two drives because Milwaukee is still selling out on any paint. No, we're not giving you layups. You have to make these threes. Mm-hmm. If they can get both, because two on the ball is going to be there. They can get both. It gets interesting. And they got to keep mixing up things with their spacing. Keep moving like double screens. Keep mixing the bigs that are trying to show if it's Portis and Brooke, make them make a mistake. Get Giannis on the strong side. Let Jaylen Brown operate. Like, it's his series. If he can put two on the ball and he can make the plays to kick out to maybe Tatum or the drive and kick gets to Tatum. Now he's facing a scrambling defense and now he's hitting shots as well. It gets interesting. But again, Boston has to do it consistently. And we saw it in the first half. In the second half, we kind of saw it go backwards a little bit. They got to sustain.
To that point, like, Milwaukee was able to make a little bit of run in the fourth, but constant kill shots for Boston. Kind of starve off some of the runs that Milwaukee's going on.
Kill shots. Yes. Love that.
So I am excited for game three.
That's not on brand, the guys.
What do you... I don't like this bit. All right. Heat Sixers. I just wish everyone was healthy. Because the Sixers are kind of making me sad now.
It is like, kind of pitiful.
It's just kind of tough. Like, we big Tyrese Maxey game in game two. And it almost didn't matter because James Harden wasn't really unlocked. Tobias Harris wasn't the same force that he was in game one.
It almost didn't matter. It didn't matter.
You know what? Fair enough. Yeah. I didn't say you did. That's cool.
Continue.
But that's just kind of tough. And then you really feel Joel Embiid's absence on the defensive end, in which their drop just does not hit the same with DeAndre or Paul Reed in it.
No, Spo doubled down on the fives. He came to double down. Any big man, we're running pick and roll. And the corner is going to be empty. What are you going to do? DeAndre, you can stand there and get these lobs. Jimmy, take a couple pull-ups. Hey, Paul Reed, you can stand there too.
Shout out to DePaul's great. Two great DePaul players in this series. Paul Reed and Max Strus. Dave Leto is no longer the head coach there, but shout out to Dave. He was also a great guy. Didn't do a lot of winning, but he's a great guy.
Hashtag is big plug. This is what we do on the show.
Yeah. There's not a bad coach that's not a great guy, though.
Accurate.
That's such a good shot. That's so tough. Oh, man. But yeah, to that point.
Give me all the bad guys. Bad guys win.
I am not touching that one. All right. So Philadelphia just could not get any kind of traction in their drop. Like, DJ, the Heat don't care about him. And Paul Reed, he's either playing incredibly too high or he's just kind of standing there, which is odd because he's like the athlete of the front court room at this point. And Paul Millsap is doing that. And so at this point, again, and brought this up after game one, like, at what point, if you're Philadelphia, do you just downsize? Like, you know what? We are just going to switch. We're going to try to bring this in the mud. There will be matchups to attack because the personnel isn't great. But just in terms of what Miami's trying to run, let's just try to flatten them out and make them shoot over the top. Like, that feels, to me, like, feels like the best path to Philadelphia is bringing Miami in the mud, flattening them out in the half court, and then trying to push on the other end.
Why are we doing this?
Like, you're just throwing Philly over the top rope. That's just tough. Like, I've seen enough. I don't need to.
I mean, I love your basketball acumen. Follow Steve Jones Jr. on the Twitters and the guys, Duncan on the Twitters, guys. They're great. They're going to dig into it. But yeah, no, it doesn't matter. Does not matter. Are we working on, are we trying to avoid a sweep or go for a gentleman's sweep? Like, what are we doing here? Because no, it's not happening.
Playoffs don't start until the home team loses the game. You know, series is shifting to Philly.
Or playoffs don't start until your star is available, which means that one team has not shown up and is not going to show up, and it is what it is.
Wow. We got pessimistic Monica on the pod.
Listen, bro, I'm with you. I wish both teams were healthy because I think this would have been a blast. But no, like, if Joel Embiid doesn't come back, like, and Miami remains healthy, great. Get it through the mud, four flat, run this empty corner. Woohoo. No. L. Oh. L. And the conversation is going to be, what's Philly doing about this contract that James Harden is now staring at?
Because the opt-in is, what, 47?
Oh, my God. Woo!
That's a lot of money.
Whole lot of money.
Giving him the 5-year deal might not be the best idea if he isn't able to get healthy. Granted, I think an offseason would really be good for him. I think he needs a full offseason to get himself right.
I think I was texting my old strength and conditioning coach about this, actually, because I'm like, dude, like, can he actually get his explosiveness back? Like, that's what everybody's pointing to, right? He's like, without a coming to Jesus moment in terms of how he cares for his body, no. I'm like, ooh, like, that's tough. Like, it's more than just an offseason. Like, you now are entering the phase of your career where you got to be willing to do different, to be different. And I don't, like, James Harden has been so supremely talented. Same kind of thing with KD, right? Like, you could argue whatever the Celtics revealed, and not everybody can do what the Celtics did to him, but, like, can you sustain bumps and hits? Like, you're now entering the phase of your career where you got to train different. And we'll see. Like, not everybody is Chris Paul go vegan. but we see what he's been able to do in terms of the longevity of his career. So we'll see.
That we shall. Steve, what are your thoughts on this this hopeless series for the Philadelphia 76ers?
I don't even know where to go after that off the top rope. Just quickly, to answer your question that you asked, I feel like every time Doc wants to go small, they give up 9 offensive rebounds, and he says, forget it, I'm not doing this. They got to unlock things for Maxey. Stop putting him in pick and roll against Bam Adebayo. It's a bad idea. Just don't do that. James is going to draw attention. You got to make the plays out of it, space the floor to try and get that going. Bring Miami's offense in the mud. Maybe you got a shot. It's a shame that Joel Embiid is out because I think Philly's found some things that could help them if he were to come, but we don't know if he's coming. So it's been deemed hashtag hopeless.
Now, I do think if Joel is available, you play him. Like, he's that good and that much of a difference maker. But, yeah.
Well, going to put a tag warning at the beginning of the pod. Like, Sixer fans, you could probably just skip this section if you
want to be optimistic. I tried to give him some hope, man. There's some things. They've done some things. Unlocked Maxey. James Harden might, hit up mid-range step backs, open things up. Miami's defense is tough, man.
There's camps that like, Nikias, are you anti-Heat culture camp? Like, where do you stand on that?
Not an anti-Heat culture camp.
He's anti-Udonis.
I knew that, Steve.
It's anti-Udonis Haslam roster spot. That's a very important distinction. That's it. Udonis should be part of the Heat organization for as long as he wants to be there. That has never been in question. It's the roster spot portion. That's it.
Well, I asked Kyle Lowry about championship pedigree, and UD is one of the guys that has a championship and knows how to do it. So, counterpoint. Right. I just think that, at this point in the series, I'm trying to think, is there another matchup on the East that Philly has a shot to get by without Joel in terms of the matchups? And I guess at this point, not really, because I think, Boston and Milwaukee are both also really good. But the Heat are just, they're just so locked in, and they wear that. None of us, whatever number draft picks, like they wear that. And now you're down, like they're kicking you while you're down. So there's that.
All right. Well, kudos to Miami. Sorry to that man, everyone in Philadelphia.
It does suck, though. It really does suck. Sucks for basketball fans. Sucks for ratings. The whole bit.
Honestly, that rant from Monica saved us from Nikias' DeAndre Jordan rant, so I'll take it.
Well,
Come on, Nikias. You got to have the intrinsic knowledge of the game.
Let's get to the W. Nah, dog. I'm not doing that.
Wait, I don't know this joke. Tell me. What's happening? You love DeAndre Jordan?
We'll offline about it. It's fine. So the WNBA season starts on Friday.
Yeah, it does. Woo!
Very excited for this one. First, I want to ask you a question as someone that also does like W content, people, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Why did we go an entire preseason? And why do we continue to go preseasons without being able to watch games? Why is that a thing?
Because you need to call your local cable provider and let them know you want your WNBA games in your market. Where are you, Charlotte?
Yes.
You want some Atlanta Dream games in your market. This is where there's a couple things happening in our country that I think are beautiful, and the conversation's great, but we're not moving as fast as we think we are. This is one of those things to me in terms of the investment. And to be fair, like right now, the W's up against the opening round of the playoffs that were fantastic. You know what I'm saying? So if you're talking linear, where was it going to go is a legitimate question. And yeah, sure, there are some windows. But again, is there enough buy-in in terms of folks that make the decisions to put it on? Mm-hmm. And I just don't know. Like, we're making progress, but games run on, so maybe we're not there yet. I think the Twitter partnership stuff, all of that is very interesting. But it's a funny time in the sports calendar. And so many roster cuts have happened. Like, there's the vets typically, at least in my experience, and I might be wrong this year, but the vets aren't, the vets are the a lot of times the driving names in the WNBA. And preseason games for vets are hit or miss a lot of times because women are still coming back from their teams overseas.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a whole bunch of, like, logical numbers, statistical driven stuff, questions on that end. But to me, it's just, we're just not there yet as a country overall.
Okay. Those are all valid points. I guess for me, like, I'm not expecting Fever Sun to be on ESPN2 during the preseason. But, like, it's weird to see the Seattle Storm tweet out, hey, this game's starting. We're not streaming it anywhere. I'm just like, y'all can't put that on Storm, on SeattleStorm.com. Like, nobody is, is nobody recording this? Like, how is...
Well, a lot of the games, some of the games are, like, the middle of the day, too. Like, there's, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not... If you have a 9-to-5, you may or may not be able to watch on your lunch break, you know? But I'm with you. I'm with you. There seems like there's all of the ways that we consume content somebody should have been on somewhere. Like, I agree with you.
Yeah, like give me the shot clock camera, something like. I don't know the logistics of it, so I'm genuinely asking. But it is weird to me. Like, I feel like that's a very simple way to garner some interest heading into your season. Like, we should be able to see something. Like, we should be able to watch it through the app at the very least.
This is where I remind you though that you are a true hoop head, and there is a, you know what I'm saying, like, you would watch that or turn it on. But there's always an ongoing conversation around the W between how you provide for fans that are true blue, been rolling with you for 26 years, and how you bring in a new audience. I don't know that the return between true blue fans that are working during the day and new audience, if you don't have the opportunity to put the marketing around the preseason games, are the new audiences going to casually, I'll be like, hey, let me watch this. So just, you know, there's a lot to juggle there.
That's fair.
That was an interesting point with the rosters, though, because it's a different ball game. Mm-hmm. It's a different build. And you got a lot of people fighting to, like, stick around, getting minutes.
It's been particularly rough this year.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. How do you sell the investment in someone that might not, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's to that point, like, I don't think Breonna Stewart's playing, like, 34 minutes in a preseason game. So, like, even with that, you're not going to see that. And then some of the fan favorites are getting cut. While we're on the cuts, Crystal Dangerfield is a free agent now. Like, what is happening with some of these cuts?
Bro, I just pulled up my girl Christina Williams' page, Girls Talk Sports TV, on the Instagram, because she's on top of all of this.
Yes,
she is. There's just the spots. Like, I don't know what to say about that.
It's bad, just, unfortunate, slash we need maybe
now, an extra. There's always some of the more unique stories in the WNBA. And why can I not think of my girl's name? She played for the Mystics. Then she went to Seattle. She hit the dagger shot versus the Mystics. Shea Petty is one of those really cool stories. You know, been cut, bounced back, finally found a way. But, like, it takes a minute sometimes for an opportunity to present itself for some names that we loved at different points. Like, Maisha Hines-Allen did not play for the Mystics, like, her first, I know her rookie season for sure, and I'm not sure how much time she got her second year, but when they got injuries, she emerges as this force in the W because she's given the opportunity. There's it's just that tough. And, like, I don't know if people really grasp that. Like, you got top draft, Alyssa Cunane, like, big time draft pick, like, not so much gonna stick, you know what I'm saying? And so it takes a lot of fortitude to navigate, survive that curve and stick.
It's tough. I can't wait for the league to get to a place to where we get the expansion. Like, I think we need two more teams at least. And as soon as it's financially feasible, like, that needs to happen. There's too much talent out here.
So I've talked to different players, folks close to the league. I'm sort of torn on the expansion right now. The Fever won less than 5 games last year. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, until the top to bottom is robust, I don't know about expansion just yet. And I know W fans might not love to hear that, because you want, more than anything, maybe you expand the roster space, mess with the cap. I don't know if I'm ready, if for the sake of competitiveness, I don't know that an entire new team or two is the answer per se.
Okay. I got you on that. But I didn't think of it from that standpoint. But I guess with the Fever, is that how much of that is talent and how much of that is just like the front office?
Yeah. That's a fair question. But if I, let me see, let me pull up my standings. Like they weren't the only team that struggled. You know what I'm saying? Like
even with all of the mess that the Dream went through last year, like they had talent on the roster.
Yeah. And that's a fair question. I think there's a combination of that. That's a, like I said, it's a fair question, but I still think, I'm just not sold on expansion just yet, personally.
Okay, I got you. Steve, where are you on the expansion?
Biased to bring the WNBA back to Portland.
Lit.
I see.
I would like to see. It's wild to me that the Houston Comets are not a thing. And correct me, I'm sorry, I was wrong. The Fever won 6 games last year.
There we go. The hashtag.
But I mean, correction. So like, but if we look at it, so they won 6, Atlanta won 8. You had 1, 2, 3 teams that won 12. And then, of course, Connecticut and Vegas are at the top of the pile with the best records of 26 wins and 24 wins, respectively. And you, some teams, you're right. Some teams are just going to have better coaches, better front offices than others. I don't know. I struggle with expansion a little bit right now. Should it happen? Yes. Right this second? No, I think you need a little bit of a better plan.
Okay, I got you. If/when we do get expansion, like what markets would you want to see get a team first?
I like the idea of Charlotte. I think Charlotte's a great city. It's wild to me that Houston as a franchise just doesn't exist anymore, all the history there. And I don't know if you expand and automatically give them the Houston Comets history. But, you know, that was a team that I loved as a little girl. I think the Bay Area would be cool. Those are probably my top 3.
All right, I got you. So, Steve, aside from Portland, what spots would you be looking at?
That's the only one for me. Sorry.
All right. Well, fair enough. All right. I appreciate
honest.
The agenda, it rolls on.
All right. I can't hate on that. All right, Monica, what storylines are you looking forward to the most for this season? What are you keying in on?
So my hometown team, I'm curious because Elena Delladonne and Alicia Clark are supposed to be returning to action this year. Alicia Clark is I believe she won 2 championships in Seattle. I know she won at least one. And then obviously Elena Delladonne is an MVP gold medalist, the whole bit. Those two certainly change the complexion of a franchise. I'm curious about the Fever. And I know we got to see who all sticks once we get through the final cuts, but they had Nelissa Smith, Queen Egbo, Lexi Hall, my girl from Louisville, Emily Engstler, and they picked up Destiny Henderson in the second round. So they have 5, you know, 4 first round draft picks, Destiny Henderson in the 5th. But again, we talk about the nature of this league being such an incredible beast. So what does that look like? In their final roster spots. Courtney Williams is back in Connecticut, which I think is a really cool reunion. She was a part of that team that made it to the finals and fell to the Washington Mystics. The New York Liberty, do they take another step under Sandy Brondello? Bernard Gelaney obviously was tremendous last year.
Steve is buzzing. This is beautiful.
No, I love, like, these are all things I'm super excited about. Chicago, essentially, Diamond's not there and Stephanie. Like, but him what is Chicago's? Him. Yeah, yeah. Who's very good. Like, because she played on the Belgian national team. We had so much fun calling those games during the Olympics, too. Chicago, what's the run it back opportunity there? And then I think Seattle, like, Sue Bird. She hasn't announced it, but let's say this is the last one. What's the, you know, urgency there? And obviously she's got plenty of talent around her. I was curious if Minnesota would kind of be spurred as well by Sylvia Fowles announcing that year 15 would be it for her. But Nafisa Collier, I believe, is having a baby soon and probably will miss this season, and that's going to be a big deal.
Yes.
And then at Dallas, like, Dallas was a team that I thought people were kind of sleeping on last year, and they showed some spurts, you know what I'm saying, where they could be dangerous. I really love what Vicky Johnson is doing down there. Never too many guards. Like, let's just roll the ball out and let's rock. Let's see what happens.
I respect it. I'll let you go, Steve, before I hop on my soapbox. I think you know where I'm going to go.
I know exactly where you're going. I was just going to ask, like, are people sleeping on the Sky? Like, I know they lost pieces, but they also added a key piece. They're pretty good.
What's their key piece? Tell me, Steve.
I just love the Meisman addition.
Yeah.
To what they already have. That's a lot of versatility, and that was a team that thrived on that. So I think that's sneaking under the radar.
I don't think sleeping on Chicago, I think, would be wild. They're the defending champs, and the core is intact, right? Candace, Quigs, Sloot, and Khalil Copper. So sleeping on them would be wild. And James Wade is a terrific coach. Now, Meisman, obviously, when she was with the Mystics, front row seat to how dynamic she is. I would say maybe people might be sleeping on her addition, but I think it would be foolish to sleep on this guy in total because they've returned four of the core.
I guess the counter there would be like on the NBA side, like so many people stuff on Milwaukee coming into the year, but that's a whole nother thing to get on the soapbox about.
Is that really a thing? Okay, all right.
Are you doing the argument thing where someone just says something and you just agree with it, like Steph Curry can't shoot? Are you doing that?
No, I'm not. No. It's never going to be that far. But also, it just turned into Phoenix and Milwaukee just getting a bunch of breaks last year. And it's like, did we not just watch how good they were? It's fine. Anyway.
Give me your clear out. What is it, Aces? Or what? You going Sparks? Where are you going?
What's happening?
I will say, on the Sparks front, I am very excited to watch Kennedy Carter play basketball. I want to see how long the bench role lasts for her because she's very, very, very good. But yeah, I'm ready to see the Aces. I am ready to see what the offense is going to look like. I am ready for Becky Hammond to open things up for Asia Wilson. I'm ready for this team to take threes. I am ready for this team they actually rank pretty high in pace, but like I want to see them get into the actions a little bit quicker. I'm just excited about what this new look team is going to look like.
I really can't wait till they run flex first possession.
We love a good flex.
All this hype for a turn five post up. What you going to do?
I'm not going to hold you in the cash. I was like, oh, did you think that? Okay, last year, yeah, it could be a little clunky if Liz and Asia were on the floor together. But like, okay. I don't know that. I mean, I'm curious to see what Becky Hammond looks like as a head coach. But I mean, the Aces where'd they get to the semifinals last year?
Yes. And then they just could not defend the Mercury. That was
wild times.
Not a great time. It's just a barrage of full up threes. And the Aces were like, tough. Yeah, let's dump it to Liz though. So it's fine. It is fine. I am 100% not mad. You know,
you are not mad.
New season.
You are working through it. New season. New look. New coach. Yeah,
woo. Here we go. Mark Davis out here paying people. Like, you know, it's a whole vibe in Vegas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great time for everyone. Also, what's Ryan Howard going to look like in Atlanta?
What happened?
Ryan Howard. Like, I'm ready to see.
Ryan's such a sweetheart. Yeah, I'm excited to see, too. I'm excited for Tanisha Wright. That's actually a good call. Another former WNBA player takes the reins as a head coach in Atlanta. She actually... assistant coach to Bill Laimbeer, the Las Vegas Aces last year. So what does that look like in Atlanta?
Mm-hmm.
I think Mo Billings is wonderful. I think she's got a very bright future this league. We get late. I'm sorry, y'all, with these yawns now, Chad. You know, I got to go watch film. We talked about this at the top of the podcast.
We are recording late on a Thursday night.
Yeah, that's what you said. I was going to be glazed over. Yeah, what's up?
Oh, the turntables.
Nakaias challenged us at the beginning of the show that we didn't do enough basketball on our day off. So,
that's true. That's right. The grind wasn't real.
That is not what I said.
Basketball never sleeps. Atlanta. Listen, I'm excited for the W season in general. I think there's a lot of, I don't want to use the word young because they're not young, but there are that second tier group of talent that's ready to take a leap. like we saw from Brinna Jelani last year, Kalia Copper emerging in the finals in a big way. I think there are names that we know when you think of Sue, Diana still in action, Candace, Sylvia Fowles. Like, there's a lot of those double-digit vets that we know and rely on. But, like, and Asia Wilson, who's been an MVP in the league, like, it's, I think we're starting to get into that top tier or that second tier, really starting to ascend. It's wild to think that Breanna Stewart would be considered, like, a second tier. But I'm just talking about in terms of age. So I think we're in a great place. I think some folks are going to emerge. I'm excited to see what Minnesota got going on. There's a lot of teams that I'm really just excited to see what they put out there.
Is there a sleeper? Someone that may make the move?
Going in to, like, as I was starting to get ready for stuff this week, I said Minnesota was sort of my sleeper, but I'm not sure. Like, in my mind, Nafisha was coming back at some point. I thought she had the baby already. I'm not sure that she has. So I thought you would get her for a good chunk of the season. If she's not there, that's a little bit of a shift.
Yeah, that would throw some things off. Odyssey Sims not doing it for you.
Just different positions. Just different positions.
I'm gonna carry the little. Sylvia Fowles being this good still on both ends is incredible. I'm ready to see what the swan song is gonna look like for her.
Absolutely incredible. I'm with you on that. Like, absolutely incredible. You know, it's wild too because she's just been so steady over the course of her career. It's not a lot of drop off. Fortunate not to have to battle a ton of injuries. But like, and she's so sweet. She's so cool. Like, Syl's amazing. So I hope that she gets everything she desires out of this season. And let's get it.
There we go. I think on the sleeper front, like, you already named them a little bit earlier. Like, I would keep an eye on Dallas. They do have, they have their star in Arike. And they just have a lot of young talent there. If they're able to figure out some rotation stuff, particularly in the front court, like, I'm intrigued by what they can do.
Yeah. They play fast. Like, I love that. I love a team that plays fast.
Steve, who is your sleeper? Are you going with the Liberty again?
Come on. You know exactly where it is. I'm doubling down. It's Liberty season. And they got Dolson? Come on.
I'm not mad at that.
Come on. I'm going to be right this time.
I respect it. What steps do you see Sabrina making this season? Very injury-plagued season last year.
I'm curious. I don't know what her offseason has been like in terms of her body. It's no doubt in my mind that Sabrina has the IQ and the acumen. But, you know, WNBA is a league of grown women. Like, you know what I mean? And so I think in year three, the physicality, you're a little bit adjusted. Hopefully she can stay healthier. And then, you know, Sandy Rondello has worked with, you know, she's Skylar Diggins' coach, Diana Taurasi's coach. Like, she's worked with some really legit guards in this league. So what does she cook up schematically there? And then by no means do I believe that Brinna Jelani's season was a flash in the pan. I think she's a legit star in this league. So what steps do they take together? As people obviously game plan for them a little differently now.
All right, I got you. And to close things out, who's your way too early finals pick? Who do you have winning it? We're putting you on the spot. Absolutely.
I'm going to go with avenging the heartbreak of the last couple of years in Las Vegas.
Friend of the podcast, Monica McNutt. Yes, sir. That is all we needed. Thank you for listening to this episode. No, I'm just kidding. Steve, who you got?
I was about to say, wait a minute. Why did you just go?
I just pulled that out of my back pocket because it could go so many ways. I mean, think about it. Last year, Chicago was like down. Then they got healthy and they made it run. Like,
yeah,
it could go so many ways. Now, in terms of experience and kind of being chiseled as a squad, Vegas has been really good the past couple of years. It just can't get over the hump. Like, do these changes allow them to get over the hump? But in the same breath, like, Seattle is healthy. Like, Gabby Williams is out there. Stewie's still out there. Like, if the Mystics have Deladon and Alicia Clark back, like, what? Like, come on. So it's wide open. I mean, the Connecticut Sun, like, that was a team with the best record last year. And they returned their core plus some folks that were sort of special in their runner-up season in 2019. Mm-hmm. This thing could go a lot of ways. It's going to be great.
Who you got, Steve?
Seattle.
All right.
Boo.
No, I'm just kidding.
Are you slandering Sue Bird again?
No.
No.
All right. What do you mean? The pod, man.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Oh, no. Breonna Stewart is great. Glad they were able to get Jewel Lloyd back. Like, it was a, you know, they are really good. Ansi McBeggar is going to have a fantastic season while Mercedes Russell is out. You know, it's a lot of talent in Seattle. I understand. Aces are winning it all. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Stalker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your pods, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at Nikias NBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Monica, where can the people find you on Twitter?
The Twitter streets at McNutt Monica. It's great.
There we go. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Bye, guys.